im Studio Erno Frohn. Wir werden zuerst über den Auschwitz-Prozess 4KS2/63 sprechen. Und zwar wird diese Ausstellung über den Auschwitz-Prozess in Frankfurt, der vom 20. Dezember 1963 bis August 64 stattgefunden hat. 65? Okay. Werden wir über diesen Auschwitz-Prozess hier sprechen, aber eben in Bezug auf die Ausstellung, die im Haus Gallus nächsten Samstag am 27. März offiziell eröffnet wird. Der Kurator Erno Frohn konnte eben für die Ausstellungssituation gewonnen werden. Und man hat in dem Sinn einen Parcours der Gegenwart gestaltet, wo es neben den Gelenken in den Rundgängen sozusagen um eine historisch-dokumentarische Ausstellungssituation geht. Die Ausstellungsarchitektur wurde eben entworfen vom Architekturbüro Holger Wallert und Anna Marita Lang. Und es werden sozusagen Erlebnisräume eröffnet, als auch ein subtiles Zusammenspiel und konzentrierte Themenkomplexe. Die Frage ist tatsächlich, wie neben dem dokumentarischen Raum eben auch die Entwicklung der zeitgenössischen Kunst dort eingefügt wird. Und dafür war eben oder ist immer noch, weil die Ausstellung ist ja noch nicht ganz fertig, war Erno Frohn zuständig. Erno Frohn ist sozusagen Kurator, Kunsthistoriker und Kritiker und er war unter anderem als Dozent an der Hochschule für Bildende Kunst und auch als Direktor der Stiftung Polinero in Antwerpen tätig. Und Ende der 80er Jahre gründete er zum Beispiel auch die Agentur AAC Frohn und die Krüft zur Betreuung von Künstlern und Kunstsammlungen. Erno Frohn leitete dann 1992/93 das Forum per Late Contemporanea, eben das Forum für zeitgenössische Kunst in Verona, und ist als freier Kurator 1997 auch in Belgien, in Lier, verantwortlich gewesen für die Ausstellung R-Gebäude, die jetzt in Lier, das können Sie wahrscheinlich besser über Felix Timmermans auf jeden Fall. Und 1999 in München war er sozusagen für die Ausstellung über die Beziehung zwischen Kunst und Therapie, Echo of My Mind, im Kulturzentrum Garsteig verantwortlich. Und seit Mitte 1999 arbeitet er als Ausstellungsleiter auch für das Aktionsforum Praterinsel München, wo er sich vor allem für Projekte dann mit jungen Künstlerinnen und Künstlern engagiert. 2002 im Mai hat Erno Frohn die Tätigkeit am Fritz-Bauer-Institut als Hauptkurator aufgenommen. Und neben eben der historischen Dokumentation, in dem, wie Fritz Bauer als Generalstaatsanwalt aus Hessen eben auch angefangen hatte, Aufklärungsarbeit, gesellschaftliche Aufklärung für anhand dieses Auschwitz-Prozesses zu entwickeln, entstehen zu lassen, ist eben jetzt nach 40 Jahren dies auch eine historische Dokumentation als Registratur und dann eben zweitens die visuelle Kunst als Reflexion und drittens dann die Funktionsräume als Interaktion. Jetzt eben die Frage an Erno Frohn: Wie ist es tatsächlich? Also man hat Auschwitz als etwas also Grauenhaftes eigentlich historisch sozusagen, ist es eigentlich nicht möglich, wirklich da an Auschwitz als Thema heranzugehen, gerade auch in Ausstellungen, wenn man sich Adorno anschaut, dass Gedichte zu schreiben sozusagen nach Auschwitz barbarisch ist, dann ist die Frage, wie kann eigentlich eine Ausstellung, also wie können zeitgenössische Künstler sich auf Auschwitz beziehen, oder ist das tatsächlich möglich, weil es eben ein Prozess gewesen ist, der eben die Täter, der eigentlich diese Vergangenheitsbewältigung und auch die Anklage der Täter hervorgebracht hat, ist das, was greifen die Künstler tatsächlich auf?
Ja, okay. Die Frage ist
ganz, wie wurde das Konzept?
Ja, das ist eine ganz gerechte Frage und hat auch mit das Konzept direkte Ausstellung zu tun und auch den Bezug der Gegenwartkunst. Es ist so, dass natürlich die Ausstellung geht erstmal über das Auschwitz-Prozess, das natürlich das Auschwitz-Geschehen als solches thematisiert. Aber die Künstler sind eigentlich eingeladen aufgrund von diesem Prozessvorgang, der in Frankfurt stattgefunden hat, von 63 bis 65, also 20 Monate lang. Und weil es effektiv so war, dass das Prozess schon mal den Auschwitz wirklich für die Gemeinschaft, für das Land Deutschland auch effektiv dargestellt hat, also das war schon was ganz Besonderes in den Jahren 60, dass man dieses Prozess überhaupt organisieren konnte, das erste Prozess von Deutschland selbst organisiert über seine eigene Vergangenheit, und dieses Transponieren in die Gegenwart würde unmöglich gewesen sein von Auschwitz, wenn nicht das Prozess da in die Mitte stand, also in den Jahren 60 effektiv in Frankfurt stattgefunden hat. Also die zeitgenössische Kunst bezieht sich insoweit auf das Prozess und nicht darum in direkte Linie, obwohl man das schwierig sagen kann, auf Auschwitz als Ort und als Geschehen. Aber natürlich, es ist eine mediale Verarbeitung, soll man so sagen.
Ja. Da wäre eben die Frage, an welchen Bereichen sind Sie als Kurator dann beteiligt gewesen? Also wie wurde die Ausstellungsarchitektur sozusagen abgesprochen im Verhältnis dann zur Dokumentation, und wie wurden die zeitgenössischen Künstler ausgewählt für diese Ausstellung? Beziehungsweise wie ist es dazu gekommen, dass Sie auch an diesem Thema jetzt arbeiten, denn als Kurator, ja, wenn man sich eben jetzt gerade, ist ja die Utopia Station hier am Tagen, wenn man sich anschaut, wie eben Ausstellungen heutzutage geplant werden oder Biennalen, da ist es natürlich, sich an ein historisches Thema zu wenden, doch sehr, sehr schwierig eigentlich.
Ja. Also es wie kommt ist folgendes, das Fritz-Bauer-Institut ist der Organisator dieser Ausstellung. Das Fritz-Bauer-Institut hat an sich natürlich als Thema den Holocaust, erforschte der Holocaust, und wie man der Titel so schön sagt, ist ein Studien- und Dokumentationszentrum zur Geschichte und Wirkung der Holocaust. Also sie haben die Idee gehabt, zum 40. Jahrestag des Prozesses auch eine Ausstellung zu organisieren. Diese Ausstellung zu ergänzen mit zeitgenössischer Kunst war diese Absicht, diese Aktualität der von Leute für heute dieses Thema auch auf andere Art und Weise sichtbar zu machen, auf andere Art und Weise dieses Thema des Prozesses zu vermitteln an jüngere Generationen, an neue Generationen, an Leute, die vielleicht nicht direkt das alles mitgemacht haben, aber die von einer total anderen Perspektive der Gegenwart diese Ausstellung besuchen und sich dann effektiv durch Mittel der Künstlerprojekten vielleicht andere Zugänge zu diesem Thema finden und entdecken. Also das war eigentlich der Grundabsicht, warum man zeitgenössische Kunst in diese dokumentarisch-historische Aussagen mit integrieren wollte. Dazu hat man dann einen Kurator gesucht, um sozusagen jemand, der sich mit der Kunstsituation auch auskennt, und hat man mir gefragt, ob mir das interessieren könnte, und habe dann natürlich auch effektiv, bin ich ausgegangen von der Situation, von dieser Frage, von dieser jüngeren Generation und von dieser anderen Vermittlungsart von so ein schwieriges Thema auf eine andere Art und Weise zu vermitteln, und habe dann effektiv für mich selbst entschlossen, okay, es ist ja erstmal wichtig zu wissen, was genau ist das Fritz-Bauer-Institut, was ist die Funktion des Fritz-Bauer-Instituts und was vermitteln die nach außen zu und was ist genau, das sind die verschiedenen Arbeitsbereiche in das Fritz-Bauer-Institut und die Mitarbeiter. Also für mich als belgischer Kurator war das auch nicht, ist es nicht meine eigene Geschichte. Ich bin ja gar nicht deutsch in deutsche Schulen gegangen, ich habe auch diese deutsche Geschichte als solches als Außenseite betrachtet. Das war von Anfang an für Frau Wojak, das ist die wissenschaftliche Leiterin und die Leiterin der Ausstellung, die Ausstellungsleitung, hatte die Vize-Direktorin von das Fritz-Bauer-Institut, fand es auch sehr interessant, dass an Außenseite sich dieses Thema dann von einer anderen Perspektive aus betrachtet hat. Und wie man dann zu den Künstlern kommt, das ist noch was anderes. Nachdem ich mir dann in diese Situation reinbewogen habe und auch mit dieser deutschen Geschichte irgendwie versucht habe, als Außenseiter auch ein Bild zu bekommen, aufgrund von dieser Vorgangsweise, aufgrund von dieser Annäherung, die ich selbst als, ich sag mal, doch als sehr interessierter jemand, von dieser Annäherungsweise hinaus, habe ich dann mit verschiedenen Künstlern angefangen, Gespräche zu führen. Okay.
Ja. So, jetzt spielen wir eben das Interview mit Gitta Willison und sie hat ihre Arbeit auch auf die einzelnen Mitarbeiter, die im Fritz-Bauer-Institut arbeiten, bezogen.
Okay, bitte, wir listen. You're part of the Frankfurt Auschwitz process exhibition, and your work is with interviews. But what I want to ask you before is, how are you working not only as an artist, and how does it come that you have an interview work in relation to the Auschwitz process trial exhibition? At which point are you now?
Yeah. Most of my works are like video works where I meet and talk with people about somehow their life, and it's often about if somebody has ideas of how they would live their life, either out of certain ideas about what life should be, or it could be they have a passion or they have a need or whatever, but certain things that they really want, which so they, and then the work will often be about how they meet with this with a concrete reality, and then that can be economic, gender wise, or social wise, or culture wise reality. So the fact that this interview is very much in continuation of what I've done before. For this work here, it took me quite a long time to figure out what to do, because the subject is so heavy and it's so loaded. Usually I try to work so that the things are not too loaded when I start, then I just personally feel more space if it's like that. And then also in this subject, everything is so heavy that there's not much space for playing around, because it easily gets not appropriate what you're doing. And in the beginning when I got the invitation, I really didn't know if I wanted to do this work. It took me quite a long time to figure out what I could do and how I could, where my entrance to the subject could be. But when I visited the institute the first time, I immediately got very interested in what the people and the institute is doing, how they deal with their subject, what rules they follow for how they can present their material they have. And this kept being in my head that I should maybe I should do something with the people in the institute. And then I had this in my head while I kept researching and going back to the institute to hear tone from the trial and to read books and to do different things. And I finally postponed the whole thing so long that I realized that, okay, either you plan the interview to start already like tomorrow, or you can't do this project. Then when I finally somehow started, then it was very interesting to do this work, and it suddenly was very linked to consideration I've had before with other works. Yeah, it could be like one work I did is called China, which would be about a homeless guy from Chicago who has a kind of life project where he's collecting all kind of trash wood that he finds and wants to prove that it has a value. And in this project, I'm quite interested in one way is that he's building up a new set of rules for in his own set of ideas of what value is, but also he has certain ideas that if they maybe came from another person in another position, they might have been listened more to, but because of his position, people read him in a certain way. And so for this, that who can say what, and what can you say and who can say it, is often part of the works. Another recent work I did in collaboration with Lars Erik Frank, a friend of mine, is about Solvej, a transsexual from Denmark who lived as a man until she was 60, and then she started to live as a woman as she's wanted all her life. And then her whole struggle to allow herself to do it, her struggle with her surroundings, and her struggle to get legal right to get a female name, and all these facts. But there's again about where, what, as soon as she breaks certain rules, what troubles are she getting into, and the fact that her locals around her would not accept that she was a man one day and a woman another day. She had to choose, if not they didn't want to deal with her. And this, that there are these, that it's bad enough that she changed, but then she has to change completely. Do you want me just to continue? With,
yeah. Maybe in relation to that, you studied in Copenhagen, in Denmark,
yeah,
art, and when someone is studying artworks, what is the motivation for it? And this is kind of question behind to develop works which have to do maybe with creativity. If you are making interviews with people who have special creativities. That is what I saw in one work from you, a woman who is making
laces.
Yeah, it's a special thing. Has this to do with how you came to be working as an artist?
And I studied literature, and I have this, I really like stories, and I really like to somehow, where do you come from one point to another point, or does one thought develop into another thought?
Yeah.
And the people that I choose, they are of course always, they're quite different. I mean, it's from older people doing laces to teenagers having a party in Norway, to the transsexual, to the homeless guy, to these people working at the Fitzbauer Institute. And so, but in all of them, it is about how do you, what kind of considerations do you have around what you really feel for, or what do you, and how do you deal with what's important, and how do you manage it in a way? I don't know how really I can. Some of particular works, I have a personal reason for why I did each of them. But that's certain. Either I had to go through a certain crisis that I can see. Then afterwards, I can see why I was exactly interested in that person's story. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind to tell these personal things, but they are not necessary for seeing the piece. Mm-hmm. But they are there, and I never really mind to tell them, because there's always a personal reason for whatever you do, even though a lot of people maybe pretend they doesn't have it. But even for almost any interest you have, if you go back to it, there will be a personal reason why you ended up in particular that interest.
Yeah.
This is actually then also part of some of the people, what they talk about in this piece from the Fitzbauer Institute. David Nielsen is very interested in, which is one of the person, she tells about stories about the witnesses, stories that is maybe not relevant for the process and then might not end up in the exhibition about the process, but where she's very interested in what's actually happening with these people after they went to the camp, after they went to the process, and for her to understand the process, she feels a need to see what's happened with each of the people afterwards.
And that's what you did, that you make a this kind of figuration as a person to bring them
in with her. When she talks very, she tries very much to make every single person who was there into single persons, and make each, to take them out of the big amount of people and make them into,
yeah.
And she dig down, so then gets very interested in one person, and then maybe another person later. So while she's talking about certain witnesses, I had a collage from where he's in a group of people, and then I made a kind of 3D and made each person more visible.
Yeah.
And there is certain parts of the video work where there suddenly will be a collage where I did something with the historical document, because these are all images from the archive of the Frisbauer Institute. And I did something with this photo from the archive that the people in the institute can't really do, because I'm going too far. You cannot go in and start to play around with making the images 3D. Then you break the rules of being wissenschaftlich and sachlich. But I can, as an artist, I can do it, and I can. Yes. And I tried then to do it in a way so that I stretch the document without still lying and without still trying. I try still to be truthful what is on the image and what the image is about. And what they talk a lot about in the work is this, that they have certain rules that they have to follow, and sometimes the rules makes a lot of sense, and sometimes the rules also limits them. Like Tanya Müller will talk about when she's doing the Verschlagwörtern, that she, or the index words, that she will hear a certain part again and again, and she will think that this person is lying. And she would feel, but she cannot write lying as an index word. She has to write selection or other words, which are basically what they talk about. And so she actually sits with an information, that she's convinced about that the person is lying, but she can't put it into it, because this she doesn't have the proof for, and you can't do it, because then it's her subjective things, and the rule for how they can work with examples is that they can't do it. But they also have the experience when they're working on these index words that one person would listen to the tone. They have this 430 hours of tone from the tribe that they've been transcribing through all of it. Lots of different languages and lot of different people that they would go through and transcript it all. And then in the beginning they would have write in brackets, maybe write the witness is crying. And then the next person will come and listen to the same passage and say, no, the witness is not crying, the witness is laughing, and making a new one, because you can only hear it, it's how different people hear it, it might be different. And it was very clear for them then that they think, this is getting too subjective, we cannot do it like this. And as soon as you go into interpretant, and then you get into this more subjective field of how to write it. So they had, then they were making up somehow rules for how they could do it. Still, if they wrote exactly what people said, then it's almost impossible to read, because the talking language is so different from the written language. So then they will have to make small changes, but where, so that you could still read the text. So this whole discussion about how much do you change, and how little do you change to make it right. And somebody else will talk about, like Ronnie Levy, who works with films from the... He works at film museums and are like collecting all different kinds of films and documentaries and TV plays, that anything that has to do with the Holocaust. And for this exhibition, he's then collected a group of films that deals with the process in itself. And he will be talking about that certain documentary people would, or certain documentaries include passages from fiction films without telling that it's a fiction film, or that often people think that the real documentary, or the part, like what's true from the past, is black and white. But of course, the reality wasn't black and white, and certain fiction films then play with that, they make a black and white film. Or that can be made, or you can fake it, you can make things look like that you follow the rule and still tell a lie, and you can follow the rules and try to tell the truth. I mean, and no matter how you put it around, you can try really to tell the truth, but there are still choices you made. You can you can have your own. So different in different situations, people make different rules for when they what they think is fair to tell the truth.
And yeah, you as an artist or someone who is making a kind of research on the activities in the Potsdam Institute, how did you make your decision to make interviews with people? What kind of research did you make before you started your interviews?
I went to the Fritz Bauer Institute several times, and I would then read the newsletter, read all different kinds of material that they had.
Just a second.
Und dann sagt sie, dass sie es gemacht hat, weil sie die persönliche Geschichte damit auch hat, nämlich weil sie selbst aufgrund dieses Erlebnis Kinder kriegen konnte, weil sie immer an diese Ermordung denken musste. Und sie nach 45 einmal schwanger gewesen ist und dann hat sie das Kind abtreiben lassen, weil sie sich nicht selbst nicht in der Lage gesehen hat, ein Kind zu verloren, das zu sehen aufgrund dieses Erlebnisses. Und es war so in ihrer eigenen persönlichen Geschichte verfickt, dass sie das nicht erzählt hat. Das ist in der Presse.
You went to the
Fritz Bauer
Institute.
Yeah, I started out with going there several times to watch films from the archive, to read stuff they had, and to listen to the original tone from the process. But actually, already at the first visits, I was getting very curious about how do the people do their work here? How do they deal with it? What rules do they follow? How do they decide about what to show and what not to show? But then I still start to think of a lot of other things that I also could do, and had other ideas, but kept coming back to this: what the people in the institute were doing. So, the idea for the project didn't develop over time. It was there from the first time when I was in the institute, but it took time before I was ready to do it. Many of the fears that I had for doing the project was that you so easily in a project like this can be like, in Danish we would say, you would be an elephant in a glass shop, I'm not a specialist in the subject. I didn't work with this subject for many years like the people in the institute did. It would be a lot of things I don't know, and which is common knowledge for Germans, but I have a different story as I'm from Denmark. And so in the beginning I was very afraid that I might do something which is, when I think I do one thing, but because I don't know the right context, I might do something else. Or that I will do something that is completely obvious for everybody here and was done 100 times before, but because I come in new to the project, that's what comes up for me. So in the beginning I didn't feel that I had enough grounding to start doing the work. And of course it's then, now I always end up like that I needed some grounding to do this, I need some kind of research, but in a way I didn't need to know everything because I asked the people and then they tell me what they're doing there. But of course I needed to try to go into it, and I wish I also did. And I can say that by now, when I've done the projects, if I had started by now, then I would know, I would not be so insecure. There's still million things I don't know. There's still so much I don't know, but I would know more about where to find the knowledge. In the beginning, it felt too big and too strange because I didn't know where to begin. with it.
So you met some people in their professional work to find out what is their connection to work versus subject.
Yeah, and the thing, well, if this would you ask how did the idea come, I can also say that when I went to the institute the first time, my first thought was when I walked around, God, this must be the awfulest work and one of the most awful works you can have, because you deal with this really, really, really hard story every day. And when I was listening to the tape there, it's so hard to listen to it because the stories are really, really horrible and hard, and you feel how important it is for the people in the trial, and you feel how much it means to everybody there, and it's really, really hard to listen to the tapes. And then still when I was here the first time, we were in the institute from 10 o'clock in the morning to I think 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and during this day, from starting out being totally shocked about having a job like this, at the end of the day I was really like, no, nobody's actually here unless they are very interested in the job, because if not, they would never be here, then they couldn't stand it. And then I got curious about what it was that kept their interest, what kind of questions it was that they were captured by, and also how they then dealt with doing something which is this hard. Two of Katharina Stiegel and Werner Renz, I'm saying all the names a bit with the Danish version here, they also talk about this, that how do you keep a distance to the work so that you can manage to do it every day, and how do you then still now and then get very close to it and very affected by it. And they talk about this, they're like a constant movement between being almost too close to it, and that you then have to move away to be able to do your job, because you can't do it if you're close to it all the time, because then you emotionally can't cope with it.
So the title, authentisch, sachlich, subjektiv, oder welchen Regeln folgt man? Wie kommt es zu dieser Frage?
It's a bit somehow dry title.
They follow rules only in relation to the activities where they could have problems, or is this a question of being, you have to be authentic to work on this subject? If you have really to have feeling of making something like a nightmare on sales?
It's both. It's in one way their questions to what they do is that they try, if they listen to a witness, they also talk about if this witness is authentic, is this witness talking so that you can believe what the witness is saying.
Yeah.
And also the way they work with it, they try to find the authentic material and present it. And they try to be sachlich, they want their subject to be sachlich. But they don't want it to be subjective, for example. The subjective and so it's the questions about when are you what and what can you do and what can't you do. I mean, what I can do in my work hopefully is that I can be subjective, but hopefully I'm also sachlich in this work, and hopefully I'm also authentic. But I can do that as an artist. If you do the historical work, you cannot do that. Then you have to follow other sets of rules of what you're allowed to do.
Yeah.
So it's I could also have chosen to put up more words in the line, but I just took up three words that will appear now and then when they talk about what can you do when, like, no, this is too subjective, hey, we have to be sachlich, no, this is not authentic, and this kind of things that they keep having certain parameters that they work around to structure their documents with. And in a way, I want to add a document to the show, not to not to criticize the show, but to add my version of a document to the show, and then this will be made out from a bit different set of rules than they did. At the same time, I don't want my document to be a lie. I don't want my document to be not sacred. I don't want it to be manipulated or things like this. But I don't mind that it's subjective, for example.
It's maybe it doesn't depend. This kind of authentic stuff is subjective because the exhibition is on the trial, not because it's another account if you work on the trial than working really on Auschwitz or on the Holocaust as a problem for history or for people who are really a lot. Auschwitz leader and so on.
Yeah. I mean, the title here is not. I mean, this title could also go in on how do you create this kind of documents in general, no matter if it's about the trial or if it's about Holocaust or other things. In whenever you try to go out and create some kind of things that you say about something else, how do you then do it? I mean, if you sometimes if. It's all. Some people also will. Like yesterday, two people after each other, not dependent on each other, came up and want to say, yeah, but sometimes almost a fiction film feels more truth than a documentary, and it can also almost be more truth. And this is just the questions about where. For me, it's more the question about where do you. How do you tell something you want to tell? You can do it by making the fiction, you can do it by making the documentary, you can do it by having a historical document, you can do it in music, you can do it in a lot of different things, but always if you want to, like the people in the Institute, you want to present it as this is exactly how we believed it was, then you have to. And then it's some people will say this is how it was, but I want to say this is how the people who did it believed it was, because you can never know for sure how it was.
Yeah.
And also, even if, I mean, you might have a date that you are very sure about and things like this, but there will always be choices. It's also a choice which accused people do they choose to show in the show, and whom do they not choose to make a biography about? And so there's always choices about what part of what you know do you tell? I lost it somehow. This is Katharina. She's
you didn't make interviews with people like Micha Bumlik or the directors or Ingrid Bojard or the curator.
Yeah.
You really make interviews with people who working this film or with the DVD project.
Yeah, I was very interested in the people who sat every day with the material and had to make the very somehow detailed choice about how do we describe exactly this with this word? How do we take this in and do we take this out? How do you go down in the process of it? What decisions do you make in the process of the words? And of course, I know, I mean, Bumlik and Royak also, when they do their research works and so on, they are in the same kind of, for sure, have a lot of the same kind of things they do and so on. But it's when I was at the Institute and I looked in, there's a corridor and then there's office on both sides, and then you walk and you look in and see the people being very concentrated and doing their work there. I got very curious about getting into this office and asking, but what is it you do here now and what's happening here now? Why is what you're doing right now important? And what is your, I mean, for each details in the process, somebody has to take care of a decision in it.
What is the reason for the photos here?
But that's what I was talking about before. Yeah. Is that they are like photos from the archive, where I stretch them a bit in a way which I can do, which you would not be able to do if you was an historian.
Yes.
David Knellesen talks about at some point that they know a lot about the accused people, but they don't really know anything about the witnesses. So in one of the collages, I mean, it's very direct, but I'm using it in the video, but then it's the accused people are made into single people and fit in 3D, and on these photos you don't, for example, see the witnesses. So then I'm using it in the video as a while she's talking that I'm zooming in on the accused people. So I went in and made the image slightly 3D, a slightly 3D effect by cutting it out and making them in different levels. And also there's one where David Knellesen talks about the witness Werber, and where I took four stills to, as he shows, two books he had written about. He is one of the few people who managed to escape from Auschwitz and afterwards went out and did a lot of work on trying to stop that. A lot of Jews came from, still came to the camp and really tried to make it known to the world what was happening. And there I then took an images that I recorded and made them black and white and made parts of them in color and also made a small, slightly 3D effect on it. And then quotes Ronnie Lewy from the works with the film, for when he talks about that you have this, a lot of people have this idea of or feeling of that the past is black and white. So I, in a way, start to play around with what is black and white and what is colors in it. Yeah, it's like I was mailed a photocopy from a sitz plan that they had in about where people were sitting in the trial, and then I scanned this photocopy and used it in one of the collages as well. Mm. And then I took this like two of the accused people, Mulka and Borger, and that's two images which I think is quite famous about her, about them when they are entering the process. And Mulka they really have very different body attitude. Like Borger is very, very, he looks like a person who's very proud of what he did and going to the court like he's very secure of that and very proud of what he did. And this whole attitude of how they, which was a big part things under the process, that it, this was very provoking for a lot of people to see that these people who did such a hard crime were so, their attitude through the whole process, that they would be laughing a bit about at the witnesses and being proud of what they did and so on. So this class is more two different kind of ways to approach the process. Or to enter the process.
Yeah. So now I think that I don't know if it should be more linked
two other works, but suddenly I'm getting a bit confused about how to continue. So
yeah, no, I just I'll make it sound a bit more cool.
Ja, zum Teil auch verwendet werden, sowohl in der Ausstellung, glaube ich, als auch in der DVD, die eines Kommentars bedürfen.
Ein ganz wichtiges Thema für mich ist die Frage der begrifflichen Ausbildung. Zum Beispiel ist es am Ende das Vorurteil dem NS-Regime gegenüber das positive Vorurteil, dass alles klar strukturiert ist. Ränge, Dienststellen, Abteilungen, dass es irgendwo eine Liste geben wird oder geben kann, wo klar ist,
was das problem with the language for you to understand what you say or someone says.
I understand most German. Now and then I had to ask them about what does this and this mean, and then they will explain it to me again. But I understand most German. It's just very hard for me to, if I speak German, to do it about something where I have to. I get so much slower if I speak German. So if I talk about my work or have to, when I'm in a situation like this, I prefer that I do everything myself so that I don't have anybody to help with the sound or light or anything. So I have the camera and then I try to do it all by myself. So if I alter, then should be slowed very much down by speaking German, then it will just be too difficult and I couldn't do it. So I would ask them questions in English and they will answer in German. And that worked quite well because I understand what they say and they understand me, but they would prefer to speak in German and I prefer to speak in English. I mean, my English is not perfect either, but it's I do have more words in English than I have in German, much more.
So näher tun konnten, so präzise näher, das ist ein Charakteristikum des NS-Regimes, ist, dass es dann genau auch in den vermeintlichen Freiheiten oder in dem Vakuum bestimmter Dienstwege oder Einheiten oder Sonderbefehlswege oder sowas drinsteckt, dass es Interpretationsmöglichkeiten auch für die verschiedenen Personen, die da ihren Dienst verrichtet haben, gab.
Das letzte Wort in dem Sache ist das Zyklon-Ding.
Jetzt kommt
Ronny. Abgesehen davon, dass die Grenze zwischen Spielfilm und Dokumentarfilm ja nicht so klar ist, wie man oft denkt. Ich nenne mal zwei Beispiele. Zum Beispiel der Film über das Warschauer Ghetto, der auch diese Arbeitstitel hatte, Asien in Mitteleuropa, von dem man nur ein Fragment hat, eine Einschränkungsfassung. Das waren Filme, die wirklich im Warschauer Ghetto gedreht wurden, in denen Ghetto Traditionen waren zu spielen. Sie mussten zum Teil wohlhabende Juden im Ghetto spielen, die ein verschwenderisches Leben führen. Der Film sollte, wenn er fertiggestellt worden wäre, eine Handlung haben, die ungefähr zeigen sollte, dass das verschwenderische Leben der Ghetto-Elite dafür verantwortlich ist, dass es der Mehrheit der Bevölkerung im Ghetto so elendlich gegangen ist. Das war natürlich ein manipulativer Propagandafilm, der da entstanden ist. Die Szenen sind gespielt, auch viele Szenen der elenden Normalbevölkerung im Ghetto sind gespielt. Natürlich mussten die
Is the Holocaust reflected in Denmark? Or how are you educated on in Denmark?
It is of course part of our of what we learn in school, what we hear about, but it is also different than this here, from my impression, for sure. Also, just because the Danish position in the war is so different from the German, and we will also hear a lot about how the Danish behave towards the fact of the war. But I must say that I actually think that this Syria, which was in the TVs in the 70s called Holocaust, maybe it did a lot of the work on making people aware of Holocaust. And really, because this was very, people saw this Syria a lot. And this is a fiction Syria and so on, but I think that the Syria really made people very aware of a lot of things. And for a lot of people in my generation who saw it when they were children, this is the film who somehow made them be aware of that something like this happened. Because it made much bigger impression than hearing about it in the school. And then a lot of schools went, when they maybe went to Prague or somewhere else on a school trip, they will go with a bus to a camp somewhere and see a camp while their school children. So it is there, but it's not... I, for example, didn't know...
So, das war jetzt das Interview mit Gitte Willesen. Sie hat eine Arbeit eben im Rahmen der Auschwitz-Prozess-Ausstellung im Haus Gallus gemacht. Und zwar sind das neben fotografischen Bearbeitungen auch Interviews mit Mitarbeitern des Fritz-Bauer-Instituts. Jetzt spielen wir noch einen Teil des Gesprächs mit Micha Brumlik, dem Direktor des Fritz-Bauer-Instituts.
Buch Kein Weg als Deutscher und Jude, eine bundesrepublikanische Erfahrung. Was bedeutet es tatsächlich jetzt wieder als Person im öffentlichen Leben zu stehen und sich zu positionieren und zu äußern, gerade jetzt in Bezug auch